Law and Grace, Chapter 10, Part B, The Feast of Weeks. The law was, 3 times in a year shall all thy males appear before the Lord thy God in the place which he shall choose. These occasions were defined in the Feast of Unleavened Bread, and in the Feast of Weeks, and in the Feast of Tabernacles, Deuteronomy 16:16. On these 3 representative occasions, Israel's males, they standing for the entire nation, had, as it were, to keep an appointment with God. Each of these occasions, we note, marked a significant stage in the agricultural year, the last being called the Feast of Ingathering at the year's end. The notion of grateful service to God for his goodness was therefore to receive due prominence. And they shall not appear before the Lord empty. Yet the means of all were not the same. No matter, every man shall give as he is able, according to the blessing of the Lord thy God, which he hath given thee. That is, none was to withhold his service to God, but all were to serve him to the limits of their powers. Of these 3 compulsory attendances, the second was to last officially 1 day only. It came after an interval of 7-day periods, beginning with the waving of the sheaf of first fruits. 7 Sabbaths shall be complete, even unto the morrow after the 7th Sabbath shall ye number 50 days. It is this method of calculation which gave rise to the designation Feast of Weeks. Thou shalt observe the Feast of Weeks of the first fruits of wheat harvest. Wheat harvest here being mentioned in possible contrast to a barley harvest in the case of the first ripe sheaf. The 1 day festival formed the 3rd of the series of 7 holy convocations. Ye shall do no servile work therein, it shall be a statute forever in all your dwellings throughout your generations. The reason for its sabbatical character is not hard to find. The toil of grain harvest was over, and labour had given way to rest, even though temporary. The new stage reached in the agricultural year, particularly the fact that the grain harvest was now complete, had to be symbolized by the presentation of a new meat offering unto the Lord. It was new because made of the new grain, and not a bare sheaf this time, but the product of harvest milled and prepared for eating. It consisted of 2 wave loaves of fine flour baked with leaven. They are the first fruits unto the Lord. Once again, the bloodless offering was accompanied by animal sacrifice, namely 7 lambs, 1 young bullock, 2 rams for burnt offering, plus meal and drink offering. 1 kid of the goats for sin offering, 2 lambs for peace offering. The loaves were consecrated to God. By waving them with the 2 peace offering lambs, after which they fell to the priest. Then, to conclude the day's special ritual, a slightly different festal offering was finally offered in addition. Here was the whole range of offerings. Sin offering first, to bear witness to the nation's failure to attain the ideal presented to it in the Feast of Unleavened Bread. Hence the 2 leavened loaves eaten by the priest as type of God, since they could not be burnt upon the altar. burnt offering second, to express renewed self-consecration to God for his mercy and pardon. Peace offering last, to signify that God's purpose with Israel had potentially come to fruition, so that the nation could exult in its fellowship with him. The loaves were waved with the lambs of peace offering, as a token that God accepted Israel despite its sinfulness, symbolized in the leaven in the loaves. They are the first fruits unto the Lord, was the added witness of the law, as it sought to remind Israel that they were but the precursors of many other peoples who would likewise be reconciled to God and made at one with him, and also that as such they were to live unto the Lord. Each new month was in effect a fresh beginning, since the infant moon opened a new time cycle. It was therefore an appropriate time for Israel to remember its own beginning as a nation before God, and to rededicate itself to his service. Accordingly, a multiple burnt offering was again made on its behalf, together with meal and drink offering and a goat for sin offering, the latter being offered first, but the former being once more of considerably greater value. To give special prominence to the notion of the dedication by the Israelites of their persons and service to God. There was also one further ceremony which distinguished the opening day of each month. The instructions to Moses for the blowing of the two silver trumpets by the sons of Aaron concluded thus: "Also, in the day of your gladness and in your solemn days and in the beginnings of your months, you shall blow with the trumpets over your burnt offerings and offer the sacrifices of your peace offerings, that they may be to you for a memorial before your God. I am the Lord your God." There are several points to be noted here. Firstly, this ceremony of blowing the trumpets was not peculiar to the new moons. It took place on all the solemn days of the calendar, that is, according to the now obsolete meaning of solemn, as used in the authorized version, those annually recurring days distinguished by special rites and ceremonies. Secondly, the blowing of the trumpets was associated with burnt offering and peace offering only, never with sin offering or trespass offering. The reason for this becomes plain when we next note that this blowing of trumpets over the burnt offering and peace offering constituted them a memorial. This form of memorial, zikaron, implying a calling to remembrance, must of course not be confused with that portion of meal offering and so on which was burnt upon the altar, azkara, and which, though also rendered by memorial in the authorized version, has quite a different sense. Sin offering was in itself quite adequate a calling to remembrance of sin, without the need for any additional device for calling attention to it. Hence the consistency of the law in decreeing that no oil or frankincense was to garnish the barley meal offering of the suspect adulteress, for it is an offering of jealousy, an offering of memorial, bringing iniquity to remembrance. So much, however, had the notions symbolized by burnt offering and peace offering to characterize God's people, that on a number of special set feasts, which is how the Revised Version renders solemn days, the nation had representatively, through the priests, to call God's attention, as it were, to its self-dedication and to its fellowship with him. What reflective Israelite could see this significance in the ceremony without feeling constrained so to live that he could unblushingly and eagerly assent to it? How effectively it brought home to him the object of each day or festival with which it was associated. Small wonder that the psalmist sought to rouse his fellow Israelites to make more active worship, saying, "Sing aloud unto God our strength, make a joyful noise unto the God of Jacob, take a psalm and bring hither the timbrel, the pleasant harp with the psaltery, blow up the trumpet in the new moon in the time appointed on our solemn feast day." None but those whose sincerity and service came up as a memorial before God, as did those of Cornelius centuries later, could be as enthusiastic as this over the sounding of the trumpets. With regularity, therefore, the appearance of a new moon was attended by this significant ceremony, serving to bring home to Israel, on the familiar principle of representation, that the moral demands of the first day of the month were really those of every one of its days. But heightening the symbolism and serving to give a tremendous emphasis to those moral demands, there was an extra special blowing of trumpets prescribed for the first day of the seventh month, this being the Sabbatic month, as it were, and a sign par excellence to Israel on that account. "In the seventh month, in the first day of the month, shall ye have a Sabbath, a memorial of blowing of trumpets, and holy convocation. Ye shall do no servile work therein, but ye shall offer an offering made by fire unto the Lord." The heightening of the symbolism was effected firstly by declaring this day of new moon a Sabbath and holy convocation. Secondly, by prescribing an additional offering of burnt offering and sin offering in order to duplicate those which were peculiar to the day, in any case, as a new moon festival. You will note in verse 6, beside the burnt offering of the month, that is Numbers chapter 29, verses 1 to 6. Thirdly, by automatically increasing the amount of trumpet blowing through multiplying burnt offering, so that the day, even among the new moons, was preeminently a day of blowing the trumpets. And in palpable allusion to the significance of Passover and the Exodus came the order, "Ye shall do no servile work therein." This, in practical moral terms, meant that each Israelite was to realize afresh that he had been called to sinlessness, to utter liberty from the thraldom of sin. No month could have been a more appropriate occasion for giving him this reminder than the seventh. Seven being the covenant number, and the man himself a member of the covenant people. The trumpets had to be blown over burnt offering and peace offering for a specific purpose, that they may be to you for a memorial before your God. For a memorial. The phrase virtually interprets itself, but there's no doubt whatever as to its meaning when we note the contents of the previous verse. There we find the command to the priest to blow an alarm with the trumpets if you go to war in your land against the enemy that oppresseth you, with the added promise, and ye shall be remembered before the Lord your God, and ye shall be saved from your enemies. The juxtaposition of the two ordinances is most enlightening. In each case, an appeal was made to God to be mindful of his people. In the one, because of their struggle against the literal oppressor. In the other, because of their strife with a more sinister foe still, namely sin. The literal being once again the sign and symbol of the spiritual. In both cases, Israel called upon God to save them as his children from the common enemy. This they had to do through the priests, because the latter so naturally served as an objective representation of the whole priestly people. When the legislation was first delivered after the death of Nadab and Abihu, there were only two extant sons of Aaron available to blow. So, two trumpets only. And they of silver to bring the merciful redemption from Egypt to mind were made for their use. But the intention was clearly that each officiating priest should likewise blow, and in keeping with this fact, in course of time, seven were used in David's reign, and 124 in Solomon's. The seventh month was the greatest month of the year, as the special ritual of the first day made clear. It spoke preeminently of rest and redemption. But all the more necessary for that reason was some special observance on which the notion of expiation as the basis and condition of redemption could be given the prominence which it demanded. With due propriety, the law both legislated for such a day and also specified that it should fall within this particular month, in order that the ideas of expiation and of rest from sin should properly complement each other. On the tenth day of this seventh month, there shall be a day of atonement. It shall be an holy convocation unto you, and you shall afflict your souls and offer an offering made by fire unto the Lord. The offering had to be for Aaron a sin offering, one young bullock, a burnt offering, one ram, and for the nation a sin offering of two kids of the goats, and a burnt offering of one ram. This offering, however, was not all that was peculiar to this day. It was the sin offering of atonement, and as such of very special significance, as we shall now proceed to see. But in addition, there was to be an offering of one bullock, one ram, seven lambs with their meal offering, and an additional goat for sin offering. These were doubtless offered to mark the day as a holy convocation, and by the priests dressed in their official livery. The sin offerings of Leviticus 16, however, were offered by the high priest alone, doubtless before the other, in keeping with the character of the day as one for afflicting the soul. They were, moreover, offered by the high priest, divested of all his distinctive priestly robes, except his turban. It is these offerings and the peculiar ritual accompanying their presentation which must engage our special attention now. This was a day of days for Israel, one for making atonement, even for the sanctuary, because of the uncleanness of the children of Israel, because of their transgressions in all their sins. In the life of even the most scrupulous man, many moral and ceremonial offences must have been committed by him, unwittingly, of which he had never become aware. Countless must therefore have been just the sins left unexpiated throughout the year by the standard offerings, each of them constituting an affront to God's holiness and defiling his dwelling place in their midst. But the expiation effected on this day was to embrace even those sins for the forgiveness of which the prescribed sacrifices had actually been offered once already. Hence, here the notion of expiation was to be ritually presented with altogether unique potency. So the rule was comprehensive and uncompromising. On that day shall the priest make an atonement for you to cleanse you, that ye may be clean from all your sins before the Lord. Thus, by one summary act of atonement, all Israel's sins were to be expiated together. Every member of the nation was to be simultaneously cleansed from them. And for that very reason, God declared, "It shall be a Sabbath of rest unto you. You shall do no work in that same day, but it's a day of atonement, to make an atonement for you before the Lord your God." The connection between atonement and rest could not have been made closer. And the importance of the atonement as the condition of the rest was stressed by the ritual in the prominence which it gave to the presentation of the sin offering, the benefits of which were so great that they extended even to the stranger that sojourneth among you. Now, in all other cases, when sin offering was presented, some specific offence had occasioned its presentation and was publicly confessed in connection with it. This time, however, on account of the national character of the offering and the scope of its efficacy, no such specific confession was possible. Although a general one was in fact made by the high priest on behalf of the entire nation, such a confession, however, did not and could not suffice on its own. So by special arrangement, the law contrived to make it valid by declaring this day to be not only a Sabbath of rest, but also a time for the afflicting of the soul, both ritually by fasting and actually by reminding himself consciously of his failure to attend the priestly ideal, each member of the nation was to express his remorse and desire for forgiveness, so that for him as an individual, the national offering should also be a personal one. The rule was explicit. Whatsoever soul it be that shall not be afflicted in that same day shall be cut off from among his people. It was to be the same for any who worked that day. It shall be unto you a Sabbath of rest, and you shall afflict your souls in the ninth day of the month, at even, from even unto even, shall ye celebrate your Sabbath. The ritual of the presentation of the special offerings was highly significant. On this day, preeminently, the high priest was the representative of the nation as a whole, not in its priestly capacity, however, for that would have been incongruous, seeing that his ministrations had on this occasion to do with sin, both in himself and those for whom he stood. So the entire priesthood was banned from the tabernacle, and even Aaron himself acted in special robes, different from those which normally distinguished him. These, however, like the others, were holy garments. So before putting them on, he had first to wash. The washing and the robes, including the mitre together, made clear that atonement in the real, as distinct from the ritual sense, could only be procured for Israel by one from among them who was actually morally perfect, who was, in fact, the very embodiment of the notion of holiness to the Lord, and had in consequence become also physically perfect. In proof that he was not that one, it was decreed, Aaron shall offer his bullock, which is for himself, and make an atonement for himself and for his house. Thus, the Levitical priesthood had first to confess its limitations and inadequacy, and on that basis only could Aaron qualify to take the people's place on this momentous day. Before slaying his own offering, he had to cast lots before God to see which of the two goats presented on behalf of the people should die as a sacrifice, and which should be the scapegoat. This done, he killed his own sin offering, then burnt incense on a censer in the most holy place, that the cloud of incense may cover the mercy seat that is upon the testimony that he die not. Here was the very presence of God, of him who is spirit. So a cloud of incense, burnt on coals from off the altar, had to cover the mercy seat when he approached it with the bullock's blood. And he shall take the blood of the bullock and sprinkle it with his finger upon the mercy seat eastward, and before the mercy seat shall he sprinkle the blood with his finger 7 times. The sprinkling of the mercy seat with blood was a confession both of the fact that the law upon the tables of stone had been broken, and of the fact that death was the penalty for such breach of divine law. The sevenfold sprinkling before the mercy seat, on the other hand, was an appeal to God to be true to his covenant and to forgive his erring people, absolutely in fulfillment of it. These preliminaries over, the goat of sin offering for the people was next killed, its blood manipulated in the same way, and atonement then made for all three divisions of the sanctuary in turn. And this done, the ritual then continued with particular reference to the live goat, this being symbolically its dead partner acting in a different capacity, since the same animal could not both forfeit its life to show the means of expiation and also serve to illustrate its effect. It fell to the live goat to illustrate the effect of expiation in the place of its dead partner. Aaron shall lay both his hands upon the head of the live goat and confess over him all the iniquities of the children of Israel and all their transgressions and all their sins, putting them upon the head of the goat. And then shall send him away by the hand of a fit man into the wilderness, and the goat shall bear upon him all their iniquities unto a land not inhabited. The goat, by now the embodiment of all Israel's sins in the year just ended, was then taken away from the sanctuary and camp, that is, from the presence and face of God. The ritual was transparent. The expiation effected by the blood of the first goat was shown by the departure of the second to have effected the utter removal of all Israel's sin from before God. And the scope of Leviticus 16 verse 21 being far too comprehensive, as we have seen, for us to limit the expiation just to sins so far unatoned for. Now at last it was possible for Aaron to resume his priestly robes and offer the burnt offering for himself together with that for the people, burn the fat of the sin offerings upon the altar and arrange for the disposal of the carcasses of the bullock and dead goat outside the camp. The special festal offerings were probably then offered, and in later times, once every 50 years, this further rule also was observed. Then shalt thou cause the trumpet of the Jubilee to sound on the 10th day of the 7th month. In the Day of Atonement shall ye make the trumpet sound throughout all your land. As the moon of the seventh month we know came to the full, the last of the year's great festivals opened, this being the third, entailing compulsory attendance by the males at the central sanctuary. The 15th day of this seventh month shall be the Feast of Tabernacles for 7 days unto the Lord. Beginning on the 15th day and lasting 7 days, the festival proper naturally terminated on the 21st. But closely associated with it was another extra day, the 22nd. On the 8th day shall be an holy convocation unto you. We must examine these two festivals both independently and in conjunction with each other. The 7 days feast was called the Feast of Ingathering, which is in the end of the year. The end of the year was the conclusion of the agricultural, as distinct from the religious year, the formal closing of one cycle of earing time and harvest, before another began with the early rain of autumn and ploughing forthwith commenced. The allegory of harvest was therefore here presented in its most intense form. As in nature, man's labors had come to the full, so had the saving purpose of God, and everything was designed to make that plain. The Exodus had been but the first step in an irresistible progress toward Canaan. And there now, in a land flowing with milk and honey, God, as Lord of the natural harvest, had crowned Israel's labors in the field. But the natural was but a parable of the spiritual, so the assured ultimate reaping of an abundant spiritual harvest in the earth by God himself had to be anticipated with due rejoicing. The toil of harvest was over. Prolonged rest could now be enjoyed. The sabbatic idea had realized itself absolutely. Thou should observe the Feast of Tabernacles 7 days. After that thou hast gathered in thy corn and thy wine, and thou shalt rejoice in thy feast, thou and thy son, and thy daughter, and thy manservant, and thy maidservant, and the Levite, and the stranger, and the fatherless, and the widow that were within thy gates. The reminiscence here of the Sabbath law is too strong to miss, and the reason for it obvious. 7 days shalt thou keep a solemn feast unto the Lord thy God in the place which the Lord shall choose, because the Lord thy God shall bless thee in all thine increase and in all the works of thine hands. Therefore thou shalt surely rejoice. Practical factors made it impossible to declare each of the 7 days a holy convocation, so the first was characteristically made to serve for them all. The seventh, on the 21st, being a Sabbath in any case, on the first day shall be an holy convocation. You shall do no servile work therein. The remembrance of God's redemptive work on Israel's behalf had, however, to be observed this time in other than negative ways. You shall take you on the first day of the boughs of goodly trees, branches of palm trees, and the boughs of thick trees, and willows of the brook, and you shall rejoice before the Lord your God 7 days, and you shall keep it a feast unto the Lord 7 days in the year. It shall be a statute forever in your generations. You shall celebrate it in the seventh month. The boughs and foliage were intended to be used to construct temporary outdoor dwellings, and the temporary character of these dwellings was intended to recall Israel's wilderness wanderings and the materials from which they were made, the happy and prosperous tenancy of the land which succeeded those wanderings, the completed harvest bearing witness to it. But who had actually been delivered and redeemed by Passover and Exodus? Not the mixed multitude. Even though they became camp followers of Israel, no, strictly speaking, none but those who were distinguished by the token of the covenant had been miraculously delivered. So very appropriately, the rule was to be, ye shall dwell in booths 7 days, all that are Israelite born shall dwell in booths, that your generations may know that I made the children of Israel to dwell in booths when I brought them out of the land of Egypt. I am the Lord your God. Once in 7 years, the Feast of Tabernacles was to be made the occasion of a public reading of the entire law. But one ceremony was to characterize the feast.
each time it was held.
That was the offering of sacrifice in profusion on each of its 7 days. 7 days ye shall offer an offering made by fire unto the Lord. Each day there were to be offered 2 rams, 14 lambs, twice the daily quota of Passover week. As for bullocks, 13 were to be offered the first day, and thereafter 1 fewer each day until the last, by which time 7 became the quota for the day, and the number of bullocks offered throughout the week amounted in all to 70. These were all burnt offerings and were all accompanied by their appropriate meal offering. In addition, 1 kid of the goats had to be offered daily for a sin offering. We note that there was no duplication of the sin offering. This was always a single animal. The 2 goats of the Day of Atonement not being really an exception to the rule, and in this case, as in others, suffice to call the need for expiation to mind. But the dominant idea was manifestly that of self-consecration. The amount of burnt offering was far in excess of that which characterized other festivals in the calendar. This was fitting for God's goodness toward it, signalized by the abundance of the harvest just reaped. The nation had gratefully to offer itself and its service to him in fullness. It had to match the generosity of his blessing with liberality of service in return. And in this respect, the diminution in the number of the bullocks was possibly meant to teach that this totality of service ought to demand less and less of them as time went by, and they approximated more and more to the ideal ever before them as his priestly people. The dwelling in booth was for 7 days only, so that on the 7th, the Feast of Tabernacles closed. Associated closely with it, however, was another day, the 8th. On the 8th day shall be an holy convocation unto you, on the 1st day shall be a Sabbath, and on the 8th day shall be a Sabbath. The offering for this day was 1 bullock, 1 ram, 7 lambs of burnt offering, together with a meal offering, and 1 goat for sin offering. This was the last of 7 holy convocations which occurred in each year's calendar, and also the concluding festival of the year. It thus brought the year's festivities to a joyous close by emphasizing the sabbatical character of them all. Yet, being the 8th day, it spoke also of a new beginning. It did this, in any case, by the very fact that it opened a new week, being the 22nd day of the month. But it did so also by the parallel which it presented to the 8th day in the life of a newborn male, when the child properly began his life as a member of the covenant people, to the entry of the consecrated priests into the independent discharge of their office, to the restoration of the leper to the camp, and to the resumption of his consecration by the Nazarite defiled by the dead. It therefore bade all who would in Israel make a fresh start. The goats of sin offering declared this to be necessary and pointed the way to do this in the multiple burnt offering. Additionally, and as an inducement, it testified, being a Sabbath, to the rest which God had in store for those who responded to its plea for renewed self-consecration to his service. A rest which would constitute the reality of which Sabbaths and holy convocations and even the Exodus and conquest of the land were merely dim foreshadowings. A rest which would fulfill the type of the most holy place and bring Israel into perfect and eternal
fellowship with God.